Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, a Friday podcast all about the Kindle. My name is Len Edgerly, and this is episode 42 for Friday, May 8, 2009. Today is Friday night, and I'm back in downtown Denver, where the buds and the leaves are slightly behind the spring unfolding that I enjoyed while I was in Cambridge, Mass. For a couple of weeks. But spring is looking pretty good in both places. This week's interview is with a leading Kindle blogger named Andrei Pushkin. It was recorded a matter of hours before news first leaked about Amazon's announcement of the Kindle DX, so you won't hear us talking about the DX. That left plenty of other things that I think you'll be interested in hearing about, especially if you have a yen for Kindle hacks, or at least like admiring them from a safe distance. This week's tech tip, courtesy of Jesslyn Hendricks, is a way to do hands-free reading on your Kindle, but please don't try this in your car. The Kindle quote is from a new book that answers the question, does the Kindle have what it takes to join that exclusive group populated by the likes of the hula hoop, the VW bug, and the iPhone to become the next bona fide cultural icon? I'll have your comments from Bob Hare, Dan Myers, John C. Adamson, Linda Hopkins, Chuck Dunn, Dan Montepaul, Dorian Nissenson, and Stephen Windwalker. You can subscribe to this podcast at the iTunes or Zune stores or by going to the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. With that, let's turn to this week's Kindle news. Well, the big news this week is, of course, Amazon's announcement on Wednesday of the Kindle DX, a big screen sibling to the Kindle 2 that will ship sometime this summer. I followed the press conference here in Denver via the live blogging of Joshua Topolsky, editor-in-chief of Engadget, and in a moment I'll play the phone conversation I had with Josh yesterday, in which he talks about what his own hands-on experience with the Kindle DX was like at the press conference. I myself ordered a DX the moment a link to the Amazon pre-order page showed up on Twitter, soon after the press conference began at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. The DX costs $489 without a case, so I, of course, had to order a case. I just can't imagine carrying that thing around without a case. So that went for $49.99. The DX's e-ink screen measures 9.7 inches on the diagonal compared with 6 inches for the Kindle 2. Its 3.3 gigabytes of available storage can hold 3,500 books compared with 1,500 for the current Kindle. At 18.9 ounces, it weighs nearly twice as much as the Kindle 2, but it's pretty thin. I think it's right around a third of an inch thick. It looks, you know, pretty great in terms of the styling, very similar to the Kindle 2. The DX has one less row of keys on the keyboard, which means you have to use an alt key combination to type the numerals, it looks like. The DX has native PDF reading capability and auto-rotating screen, so it knows when you are holding it vertically or horizontally and automatically adjusts just like an iPhone does. The button controls are all on the right side of the Kindle DX. If you want the controls on the left side of the device, you could simply flip the DX 180 degrees and the type would readjust for proper reading, but then you'd have the problem of the keyboard being at the top of the device with the labels of the keys upside down. In the show notes under news, I'll have sample links from the tsunami of DX coverage that apparently has yet to crest on the internet. My sense is that the early reviews are skeptical about the DX's chance to make real inroads in newspaper content. That was something that was highlighted at the press conference by the appearance of the publisher of the New York Times, and word that the Times, the Washington Post, and the Boston Globe are going to have some kind of special deals where you'll be able to buy a Kindle cheaper if you enter into long-term subscriptions with those three newspapers. The tech pundits that I was following seem to express more willingness to believe that the DX textbook trials this fall at Arizona State, Pace University, Case Western Reserve, Princeton, Reed, and the Business School at University of Virginia might actually be the start of something big. For example, Barbara Krasnoff in her hands-on review for PC World stated, considering the number and cost of textbooks, this seems like a useful development for colleges. If Amazon can make those pricey textbooks available to students at a discount, it could make the $489 device worth its price. A Kindle DX in one's backpack would be a lot lighter and more convenient than several pounds worth of print. I thought it was impressive that textbook publishers Cengage, Learning, Pearson, and Wiley, together representing more than 60% of the U.S. higher education textbook market, will begin offering textbooks through the Kindle store beginning this summer, according to Amazon's press release. When I first heard about the native PDF reader on the DX, I imagined this might be the killer Kindle app for lawyers and other professionals, business people, because I assumed there would be highlighting and notes capabilities for lengthy PDFs on the Kindle. This turns out not to be the case, I realized, in reading a post by Jeslyn Hendricks at the knuckleheadnetwork.com blog. She pointed out that we won't be able to use text-to-speech on PDFs opened with the DX's native PDF reader, and there will be no highlighting or notes capabilities. You will be able to bookmark pages on PDF documents, and you may still be able to search if the PDF is text-based instead of image-based, such as in a scanned document. I've got to learn a little bit more about that search possibilities in the coming days to find out exactly what kind of search would be possible on a PDF document on the Kindle DX. For now, let's turn to my interview with Joshua Topolsky. I began by asking him how many Kindle DX demo units were available at the PACT press conference held Wednesday morning at Pace University in Lower Manhattan.
They had about five or six of them, I think, maybe a few more. They might have had a few more than they did at the Kindle 2 launch, but certainly not enough to go around. I mean, there were people standing on tables trying to take pictures of them, so it was a bit of a free-for-all.
What were your first impressions?
Well, it's bigger.
Yeah.
The screen looks great to me. I mean, personally, I would have always preferred, or would prefer in general, a device that's just screen. So I think you see a lot less plastic on this. It looks like a lot more screen to me, which I like. First impressions are, of course, my first impression is this is expensive and a real burn to people who just bought the Kindle 2.
Do you think it's really the same audience, though? Because for people that bought the Kindle 2 mainly to read books, I don't see this as really a great way to read a regular novel.
Yeah, I guess, that's certainly an argument, and I don't know if it is the same market. I know if it were me, if I were given a choice between this and the Kindle 2, I would, all things being the same, I would choose the DX.
I see.
So, then again, I'm a weird guy. But I spoke with Peter Rojas from GDGT and the founder of Engadget. He was at the launch as well, and he said the same thing. And I think that, so maybe for techies it's a different story. But, it's obvious they're aiming this. They want it. They're obviously the textbook market is a huge, it's a huge play for them, and in some ways the newspaper market. Although that is their plans, Amazon's plans with the newspaper market seem a little less crystallized than I kind of expected them to be.
Did you get any hints from any newspaper people there as to what kind of a discount the Times and the Post and the Globe might actually be offering?
No, and I think that's the big question. I mean, for me at least. I think one of the ways to position this and make it very attractive is for newspapers to say, look, we're going to subsidize this thing. We're going to give you a big, just like phone, just like phone providers do. We're going to give you a big discount on the device, but you've got to sign up for our service. To me, that would be a huge win for Amazon. It'd be a huge win for newspapers who are trying to hold on to readers and trying to obviously save some money. Because they spend a lot of money printing newspapers. And, right now we don't know what those plans are, if they're going to offer plans like that. What they said was they're going to offer this as a service to people who aren't in delivery areas for the New York Times, which seems like kind of backwards, if you ask me. I mean, I think the people who would most be interested in this are people who are currently getting the New York Times delivered.
And wouldn't it be an economic advantage if they turned someone from a print subscriber in their local cities to a Kindle subscriber?
Well, you would think that, but they seem to want to, there seems to be some, with the newspapers, they definitely seem to want to hold on to the idea of people getting a physical newspaper in their hands. I think it's backwards thinking. I mean, I think that eventually, books make a lot more sense to me than newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
Newspapers you throw out every day. Books you can keep for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of product makes a lot of sense as a delivery system for a newspaper, but they've got to package it in an attractive way for people.
Yeah. Now, turning to the textbook, it does seem that's a little more developed. I was impressed to see that the publishers that they've teamed up with account for 60% of the textbook market. Are these people really going to be able to start churning out Kindle versions of textbooks by the next school year, or is it going to be a pretty long process to get that textbook content on there?
From the looks of things, the rollout is going to be, the test rollout of this is going to be very limited. Mm-hmm. We did a post yesterday. It sounds like something like only 300 students are going to see these when they begin rolling them out. So in terms of they obviously have lots of deals with publishers. I assume that it's not going to be a huge hassle for them to put their textbooks onto these devices. I think the question is how will students find using something like a Kindle versus a textbook? You know, one of the things, you know, our editors had big debates about this yesterday. You know, everybody had an angle, and one of the big topics was, one of the things that I brought up when we were talking about it was, you know, with textbooks, when you're studying, you might have three or four textbooks open to certain pages, and you're looking around. You know, that's the kind of thing you can't do with a Kindle. I mean, you know, there are ways to sort of hedge your bets one way or another, but I'm not sure if hedge your bets is the right term there. But the experience will be very different. So I think I'm pretty sure that the word experiment was used a few times yesterday during the announcement. Mm-hmm. I think that this is an experiment still.
And a lot of it, too, I would think annotations and highlighting and search, those are good things to have in a textbook. But as you are holding it, could you imagine yourself as a college or a grad student actually using it with the controls that it has?
Everybody studies in a different way. You know, everybody has a different style of how they like to learn and how they can get information from devices. You know, some people, I think this will be, godsend. They'll say, oh, finally, this is just what I wanted. You know, to me, and I think to many people, you know, I know my wife, for instance, you know, she underlines things in her book. She's highlights. You can do the same things on a Kindle, but it's not quite the same. Right. It's not like being able to take out a pen and write a note to yourself on the bottom of a page, which I know a lot of people do. And so I think there's a speed issue, you know. And I think there's a, you know, I don't want to downplay the idea. I think it's great to move towards new technologies when it comes to, especially when it comes to education, but I'm not sure the DX will be the perfect solution for students and for textbooks.
Yeah. How about the screen contrast, with all those issues about the Kindle 2, could you detect any improved contrast on the text on the screen of this compared to the 2?
To be honest with you, I thought the screen looked better on the devices that we saw than the Kindle 2, at least the review unit that I had. I thought that the black seemed very pronounced on these new devices. And, these may just be a few, they say they're not going to have these. These aren't going to be available until the summer, I think is what they're saying. So these may be a few demo units. But I thought the screen looked really great on them. And particularly when it came to pictures the photos looked great. Line art looked tremendous on them, and the text definitely seemed to be a bit blacker to me on the background.
Did the screen refresh seem any slower? You thought maybe on a large page it might be.
I think it is slightly slower. I think it's right around what the Kindle 2 is doing, but I think there is a slight lag due to the fact that it's a larger screen. I'm not sure. I don't think the internals are really changed in any way. Mm-hmm. So it's, I would say, almost imperceptible, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think it's going to be a big success or sort of a dud?
Well, you know, last time we talked, I said I think they're going to sell out of the Kindle 2, and they actually didn't sell out of the Kindle 2.
Right.
Either they prepared better than they did for the original Kindle, or, you know, just not that many people are interested. But it seems like a runaway success, the Kindle 2.
Yeah.
The DX is a little bit of a harder sell. I think that, you know, it's like we've been talking about here. It's not really aimed at, in many ways, it isn't aimed at, you know, your general consumer. So it's, you know, for the markets that it's intended for, I will have to wait and see. I think the big question is, is this going to be implemented in a way for newspapers that makes a big impact?
Yeah.
I think we're seeing now, with Hearst getting into this, and Rupert Murdoch is talking about, you know, getting into this game of electronic publishing, essentially. I think that, you know, it's the next few years are going to be very interesting, and the DX is certainly a start. So it'll be sort of fascinating to watch how this plays out. But I think that's a big question, if it's going to be a runaway success or not. I don't think textbooks are going to – I don't think this is going to put textbooks to sleep. You know, mm-hmm. I think that they're going to have to find a more compelling angle for this device.
Hmm. I thought it was pretty amazing when Bezos said that the figure is now 35%, the share of Kindle sales for books that are available in print and Kindle. Was there much reaction to that when he announced it, or that seems like quite a leap over the last time he said it was 13% just before the Kindle 2 came out?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Kindle 2 definitely raised the profile, and they've been, I feel that Amazon has been pushing a lot harder recently. Obviously, you know, they introduced the public to the concept of things with the original Kindle. I think the Kindle 2 pushed a lot of people over the edge. The design was right. The promotion was right on it. I think a lot more people were aware of it. The reaction, I mean, there wasn't a palpable reaction, but it's a big figure.
Yeah.
And it says a lot about who Amazon buyers are, I think, mm-hmm. to start with. But it also says a lot about where we're going for a lot of people when it comes to book sales. You know, there's no question that e-readers and products like the Kindle are going to continue to gain ground. You know, it's a real practical solution for a lot of people. You know, I don't think we've reached the iPod moment yet. You know, I don't think it's going to be, you know, we've crossed into the territory where this is happening and everybody's going to have one in a couple of years. But I definitely think we've started down that road.
Hmm. Interesting. Anything else that came up that you think's significant that we haven't talked about?
Nothing off the top of my head. I mean, the thing about this launch was that you could kind of, you know, the feeling was there was not that much excitement about this launch. You know, we just saw the Kindle 2, and in essence, this is just a larger Kindle, and that's, you know, not knocking it, but it's hard to be really excited about it. The other thing is that, you know, this is something I wondered yesterday. Why now is my question about the Kindle DX. If it isn't going to be available until the summer, and school doesn't come back in session until the fall, right? We're just at the end of the school year.
Mm-hmm.
Why not introduce this in the summer, give people who just bought the Kindle 2 a little more distance between these products, and get the hype a little bit closer to when you're actually going to have them in people's hands? I guess that's really my question, you know, from the launch yesterday is why did they announce it now? Hmm. I think that's something I'd like to get some answers on.
Do you think it was to preempt what Apple may do at what's their developers conference coming up in June?
I mean, that's possible. We don't have. I mean, you know, there's been a lot of speculation about an Apple tablet of some type,
right?
Or some sort of larger, you know, iPhone type device, but it's, you know, right now it's total rumor. We don't have any way of knowing. Maybe Bezos knows something that we don't. I mean, that's certainly possible. But yeah, I mean, that's an angle. It's possible. Maybe, you know, maybe the New York Times was hot to trot on reminding people that they're still in business.
Mm-hmm. maybe this will save the Boston Globe.
I mean, it's possible. You know, it may people may say, oh, look, you know, here's another option.
Mm.
I don't know. I think it's kind of a mystery, but I do think the timing was a little strange.
The other thing I thought, you know, that PDF capability, I was thinking lawyers when I saw this thing, that somebody that could dump hundreds of pages of depositions on a device and then travel with it. Isn't there a possibility of a pretty strong business market that
they definitely were demoing, you know, for instance, they had TiVo's quarterly reports or something loaded up onto one of the devices we looked at. And so I think they're absolutely targeting the business sector. But again, I mean, I think this falls into the argument there is the same argument for if it's going to work as a textbook is that, you know, if you're a lawyer and you're reading through stacks of documents, you're making lots of notes,
right.
You're, you know, you're sort of, you've got maybe five different documents up on a table at the same time that you're looking over. So, you know, I think it's a question if this workflow is going to, if people are going to be able to adapt to this or if they're going to find that it's, you know, it may be, you know, we may find that people using a device like the DX to look through legal documents are more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
But since it's not tested, like I said, the word experiment was thrown around a lot yesterday, and I think that it's at this point it will be an experiment.
Yeah, That's great. That's terrific. I really appreciate talking to you, Josh, and I was envying you being there. So
you got to go. The next Kindle launch, you should make every effort to be there. I think you would really enjoy it.
I will. I'll just camp out in front of the whatever the next cool building they choose to have it in.
I'll let you know. I'll give you the heads up.
All right. Thanks a lot. Good talking to you.
All right, same. Thank you.
I want to thank Josh for the great conversation yesterday by phone. In addition to being a fan of his Engadget blog, I've become a subscriber to the informative and entertaining Engadget audio podcast, which he does with other Engadget staffers each week. While Leo Laporte's great This Week in Tech Twit podcast sometimes has the boomer-aged host and his guests sipping wine, the Engadget crew is a generation younger, and it seems very well caffeinated by comparison, so I recommend it highly. Another source that I recommend to you if you want to explore the implications of the DX introduction is Abhi's iReaderReview.com blog, which includes separate 50-word reviews of the DX for college students and parents. He smartly, I think, extrapolates the way our existing Kindles lead us to read more and read more immersively, and predicts that, quote, Kindle DX will help you do better in school. He says you won't get he doesn't predict that a student would get the $489 back in cheaper textbooks, because you'll love to read in college so much more that you'll end up buying more books. He estimates textbooks might cost 25% less than traditional textbooks, but probably not 50% less. Abhi guesses the textbook partners will start off with 25 to 40% coverage of titles in Kindle DX Edition, reaching 60 to 70% of the market in 2 to 3 years. He wrote thousands of words on his blog about the DX, and it's all worth reading. Another good source is Stephen Windwalker's Kindle Nation Extra that he put out on the day of the DX announcement. Here's a snippet. Stephen wrote, "The Kindle DX will change academic life as we know it, and it could ultimately collapse the outrageous old-world textbook publishing industry. In the short run, Amazon must walk a fine line between attracting textbook publishers, becoming the medium for the syllabus packs that so many profs and instructors use nowadays without going afoul of copyright issues, and giving academics and students a taste of the brave new world. Just guessing here, but it says here that if we survey Kindle Nation demographics again this fall, there will be a lot more than 1% of the respondents who are under 23. So I'm sure there's going to be lots more DX news for future episodes of the podcast. For now, I need to stop pawing through the mounds of good stuff that's out there on the internet and wrap this week's show up for the posting. I've got a deadline of midnight that I have, and I'm only 2 hours away, so I've got to get this up. Brian Person asks, which time zone is my deadline of midnight? And the answer is whichever time zone I'm in. So tonight it's Mountain Daylight Savings Time. Coming to you soon. I sent out a call for tech tips to the Kindled Spirits email list today, and I received enough to replenish my tech tips folder for the next few episodes. I particularly admired the originality of this one from Jesslyn Hendricks, who blogs at knuckleheadnetwork.com. She wrote, "When my hands are busy but I want to read my Kindle, I turn on text-to-speech, then turn the sound all the way down. That gives me the auto page turning without touching the device. What's nice is that you can speed it up or slow it down via the TTS speed as well." So this is a clever idea, and if you have a Kindle too, you can try this tip simply by opening a document and turning on Start Text-to-Speech from the menu. And once you hear the voice, the voice starts reading to you, just turn the sound off by pressing the minus sign of the volume control button, which is on the upper right side of your Kindle 2. You can then set the speed with which the page is turned by pressing the fonts key on the keyboard. That's the one with a capital A and a small capital A. Then move the five-way controller to one of the three settings for speech rate. When I selected faster, I found that the pace of the page turnings was just a little bit slower than my initial reading speed, but I think that might have been because I was reading faster than usual, fearful I wouldn't reach the end of the page before the turn. I seem to remember a devilish reading speed and comprehension test when I was a boy, where you had to race the device before it moved to the next text. But when I settled down to follow the pace of the turns at the highest setting, I could indeed read hands-free. And that might be a good tip for reading in bed sometime on a cold night, when even just getting your hand out to press the next button can can bring a little of that cold air in, especially if you're spending the December in Cambridge, Mass. So thanks to Jesslyn Hendricks for this fun and original tech tip. I also want to thank Stephen Windwalker, Joshua Talent, Larry Goss, Pat Hahn, and Linda Hopkins, who also sent in tips that I'm holding on to for future episodes. Andrei Pushkin writes the popular blog Kindle Blog, and I caught up with him by Skype on May 3rd. I've noticed that his blog often contains very good Kindle book recommendations and substantive technical tips, such as Jesse Vincent's Savory Hack, which lets you download PDF files from the web directly to your Kindle for opening. Andrei has done his own work on a font hack, which led to Ted Inouye's hack, which improves the contrast on the Kindle 2 screen. That's one I haven't actually tried yet, but I'm aware of it, and I've seen reports that it's pretty effective. So Andrei's blog is a good mix of the literary and the technical. If you Google Kindle blog, his is the second non-Amazon blog to appear, just behind Abhi's iReaderReview.com blog. Andrei, who is a software engineer on the West Coast, took over the blog Kindle blog in September of 2008 from a college student who had started it but couldn't keep up with the blogging commitment after graduation and full-time employment. Since Andrei and I spoke the day before news broke that Amazon was going to announce the next new Kindle, you won't hear any discussion of the DX in this interview. We did some speculating about when the so-called Kindle 3 would arrive, and through the magic of GarageBand editing, I've been able to eliminate evidence that we were both clueless about how soon the next big thing was going to be right on our doorsteps. We'll begin the interview with Andrei's answer when I asked him what sort of reader he imagines when he sits down to write blog Kindle.
So I imagine a person who obviously has Kindle or thinks of getting one, and a person who is just a little bit more curious than what your regular user's manual allows. So I try to digest relevant news from the industry, and also I provide links to different hacks that other people created, or I created one myself as well, because not being able to read Cyrillic characters was a real bad experience for me, and I just had to fix it.
Is your background from Russia?
Close enough. It's Belarus. It's former Soviet Union.
I see. How long have you been in the U.S.?
5 years.
So you needed a way to read some books in the Cyrillic alphabet, so you just created the hack yourself.
As you can imagine, Russian books are harder to come by in America than they are where I'm originally from. And a lot of good Soviet fiction is not copyrighted. So it's freely available for download on the internet. Previously, I either read it from the screen or I just printed it out. But having it on Kindle is obviously much, much more convenient.
Now, you have a famous Russian literary name. Is that a sort of a blogger name, or are you related to the Pushkin the writer?
No, actually, that is my real last name.
Mm-hmm. Any relation?
And I'm not a direct descendant, though I'm a descendant of one of his siblings. So real, real, real far relative.
Well, now, turning to some of the things you've been blogging about, you recently said you thought that Amazon's purchase of Lexcycle, the maker of Stanza, could possibly indicate that there might be a Kindle desktop application or edition. Could you say a little bit more about that? That's the first I'd seen anyone suggest that as a possibility.
It's just a speculation and wishful thinking on my part, but I believe it does have some merit because still there are much more PCs on the market than there are Kindles or any other portable devices. And most of those computers have the capacity to display ebooks, and people would like to use them, if not to read the book entirely, if they work with the book, they just want some excerpts or find some information quickly, that would be very convenient to them. And I would imagine they would end up as paying customers for Amazon. Now, I realize that DRM is a big issue here because it's much harder to hack complete device like Kindle than it is a PC program, because you pretty much have a complete control over your computer. But from my personal experience, most people, if they have the ability to buy something legitimately at a reasonable price, they wouldn't go to the trouble of piracy. Mm-hmm. So people would go the easiest way. If it's the easiest way for them to get a book right here and right now, because people love instant gratification, if the easiest way is to pirate, they'll pirate. Because, I mean, you can't really catch everyone. But if the easiest way is to get it legitimately, most people will go that way.
And so they might be willing to pay something to buy a Kindle book that would be readable on their PC.
Yeah, if, say, Kindle desktop application were one of the six allowed Kindle devices or pseudo devices that can be linked to Amazon account, that would absolutely rock.
Do you think that the iPhone Kindle application is counted as one of the six allowed devices?
I think it's counted separately.
Okay, so you can have...
And for a good reason, because iPhone... doesn't really provide a good ebook reading experience.
Right. Do you have any other hacks that you're looking at or that you've heard about or that you'd like to see?
Well, I obviously like the Savory hack that allows you to download PDF files and Kindle would automatically convert them. So you don't need a PC or to use PC or Amazon conversion service for that. I played around with it, but yeah, frankly, like in my usage scenarios, I don't work much with PDF books, so it wasn't a big deal. What I really would like to see, and probably someday I'll start working on this hack, is create a service which would run on Kindle that would email the annotations and clippings to my email account or somewhere else, because one of the main scenarios which I encounter is I read in a book or I'm reading some kind of journal and somewhere where I don't have access to PC at all. And I really would like to clip some article and get back to it later. I do my task management through email, so it would be great if I could just email myself a clipping so I don't forget to follow up on this article or do something about it.
Oh, I see. So you're reading on the Kindle and you highlight something?
Yeah, or find an interesting article in a periodical that I'd like to share with my friend.
I see.
Now I has just to remember it and email him article manually by copying text files via my computer. Not really a good experience.
Oh. So you can picture a hack where there would be something that you would do on the Kindle that would automatically result in the email forward.
Yeah, something like when you type in an annotation, type a mail to either email address or some kind of alias which would be mapped to an email address.
Right.
And then Kindle would email it using the built-in WhisperNet connectivity.
And you could email it to a friend or yourself or whoever.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Well, and that's something that you might work on yourself or find someone else to.
Well, if somebody would like to pick up this work, because I really believe it wouldn't be that hard to achieve.
Yeah.
Jesse, who created the Savory hack, he proved that you can run background services on Kindle. So you can just create another service which would monitor the clippings text file and watch for changes. And once there are changes, just see if there are some mails that need to be sent and then contact the Amazon proxy and send the email. So if somebody does it, great. If not, maybe I'll do it one day. But unfortunately, I wasn't able to dedicate a lot of time recently to the blog or to improving the phone hack because I'm quite loaded at work right now.
I see. One thing about the hacks that you've pointed out and others is that if you install one of these hacks like Savory or the screensaver hack, if there's an update of the firmware from Kindle, it doesn't automatically go to your Kindle. You have to take away the hacks and do that manually. So what I've wondered is, do you think there's ever any firmware updates from Kindle that aren't flagged with a version number so that you might be blocking some firmware updates that you just never really become aware of?
That's a possibility, though I think in the past all of the updates had explicit version numbers, and because Kindle is based on Linux, which is open source, Amazon has to publish the source code for every version. I don't think they can get away with shipping a firmware update without publishing source code for it.
Any other thoughts on the Kindle that you'd like to share or things that you think are interesting?
I think I blogged about it before, but the most interesting thing about Kindle is how successful it is. And really, Kindle success doesn't have any rocket science behind it. Amazon just created something that's easy for people to use, something that exploits instant gratification, which a lot of people like, obviously me included. Mm-hmm. And they just did a simple, not fancy thing, but they did it right, and that's why it's so successful. And hopefully it will create a civilized ebook market, which would then evolve to a more civilized information market. Hopefully 5 or 10 years from now, we wouldn't be bound to hardware-specific DRM formats. So if you buy a track from iTunes, well, now you can actually get some DRM-free ones from them. You can play it on any device in your car, in your PC, your iPod, wherever. So hopefully the same would be true about the books. But in order for that to happen, no market should come to some kind of unified standard, which a lot of people use. And hopefully Kindle will become the standard.
I'd like to thank Andrei Pushkin for the interview and recommend that you check out his blog. You can find it at blogkindle.com. Stephen Peters interviewed me for his new book, Kindle Culture, Tales of How Amazon's e-reader is Sparking a Cultural Revolution. So the first thing I did naturally when a copy of it landed on my Kindle was to search for my name. I will use what I found for this week's Kindle quote, beginning at location 181. Len Edgerly, who has been tapping into the pulse of Kindle culture since July 2008 with his weekly podcast, The Kindle Chronicles, thinks a lot of the positive reaction stems from the excitement of a new development coming along for an old pastime. Quote, "You're dealing with an activity that is really close to a certain kind of person, reading and literature," Edgerly says. "For those of us that have grown up loving books and reading, and maybe not so much in the athletic side of the world, to find a device that changes the way we read and improves it or enhances it, I think that's the source of the passion and connectedness of this community." That's this week's Kindle quote from Kindle Culture by Stephen Peters. And Stephen is going to be on the show next week. We have an interview scheduled, I believe it's on Monday, so looking forward to talking with him about the research he did for the book and the writing of it and whatever else we can think of to talk about. Time now for your comments. Bob Hare replied to the DX alert that I sent out to the Kindled Spirits list with the following comment. "Thanks, Len. I watched the live blog too. Very exciting. I think that I will have to start a blog on the Kindle so I can talk my wife into allowing me to buy one. A big screen and PDF. I can't wait to see some reports on how well it works. It will be interesting to see if they have addressed the contrast issue. The brother that loaned me his Rocketbook just emailed me to ask how I like my Kindle so far. Interesting timing on the question. He doesn't have one yet, but I suspect that he will be the first in our family to own a DX. Keep up the great work. The workshop was very interesting." That's a reference Bob's making to the unedited audio that I added to the podcast feed of my Kindle talk given April 28th at MIT for the Boston PDA Users Group. And he also liked the interview with Stephen Windwalker. Best regards, Bob. Dan Myers wrote, "Hey Len, thanks for all the info. I had an 11 o'clock appointment. Thanks to the wonders of iPhone, Twitter, and 3G coverage, I saw your Twitter at 10:55 about Kindle DX availability and had the product ordered before 11 o'clock. With the wide range of publishers, it seems like anyone can start getting textbooks. Given the price of textbooks, I don't see an issue about price. I do wonder about the durability of the unit for college students, as someone who has had to get replacements for my Kindle 1 and 2. Looking forward to the bigger screen, Dan." John C. Adamson emailed, "I bit, ordered one this morning on faith. I'm looking forward to your coverage to find out if I'm an early adopter or a Homer Simpson. Good luck."
Linda Hopkins emailed, "Hi Len, any chance you can interview someone from Amazon this week? I did try, as a matter of fact, but so far I haven't heard back. So glad you got your order in. I saw a screenshot of Wikipedia, and it looks like it can display web pages much better, along with better displays of complex PDF files. I'm trying to get a handle on what's different between the Kindle 2 and Kindle DX besides the obvious size. Any chance it will have folders? If PDF capability is built in, does that mean no conversion is necessary? It looks like there are no buttons on the left side of the Kindle DX, maybe because of the auto-rotate feature. You certainly have no lack of material for your future podcast, Linda." The answer to your folders question is, unfortunately, no folders yet on the DX, and no conversion necessary for PDFs on the Kindle DX. Chuck Dunn emailed, "I am on my fourth Kindle 2. Two of them had issues with the screen, and one would not take a charge. The one I have now seems to be the best of the best, and I really enjoy it. However, like many others, I'm not happy with the contrast. My boss has a Kindle 1, and we've compared them side by side, and there really is a significant difference. My question is this: do you really believe that this issue can be resolved via a software update? And if so, do you believe Amazon is going to correct it? I've done so much reading about this issue that I'm just confused. Take care, Chuck." As I email Chuck in reply, I will admit to being baffled on whether Amazon could fix the screen contrast problem on the Kindle 1 compared with the Kindle on the Kindle 2 versus the Kindle 1. I've heard people with more technical ability than I have state that it could be fixed quite easily, but I have not seen unanimity on exactly what the problem is. My own perspective is that the Kindle 2 contrast is okay for my eyes, not optimal maybe, and not as good as the Kindle 1. But the other improvements on the Kindle 2 for me more than make up for the problem, and I'd never go back to the Kindle 1 as my reading device. That said, I'm going to be a very happy camper if Amazon does manage to fix this problem somehow. I'm hoping to do another interview with Amazon's Kindle Vice President Ian Fried in a month or so, and it will be one of the first questions that I'll ask him if I get the chance. Meanwhile, I was interested in Joshua Topolsky's impression in the interview that the text was nice and dark with good contrast on the Kindle DX demo unit that he saw at the press conference. So perhaps at the least future generations of the Kindle will address this issue, and I'm still holding out for some kind of a fix for the Kindle 2s. Dan Montopoli emailed, "Len, did you see this chart detailing the Kindle's effect on Amazon's sales? Somehow this seems to have been missed by the media coverage of today's event, at least the coverage I've read. Kindle sales represent 35% of all sales for books that have Kindle versions available." Dan included a link that I'll have in the show notes in the comments section. It's a Silicon Alley Insider post titled, "Kindle Books Now a Shocking 35% of Sales When Kindle Version Available." Dan continues, "By the way, I really like my Kindle and your podcast. I really like the news that you provide and especially your interviews. I thought your interview with the woman from The New Yorker was an excellent discussion of the challenges of design in a digital medium." Thank you, Dan. Dorian Nissenson emailed a copy of the first Amazon bill I've seen with real charges for WhisperNet transfer of documents to the Kindle. She wrote, "I found a bunch of books at Bain Books Webscription and bought them. Then I used Calibre to convert to Mobi and sent them to my Kindle. It was a big bunch of frivolous comfort reading. Last week, I bought a number of Heinlein books and sent them and received no bill. I copied the relevant parts of the bill I received below." So the bill that she enclosed in her email shows a total order of $1.80 broken down into individual files, most at 15 cents each, the charge, and some at 30 cents. The bill includes the message, "The following items are auto-delivered wirelessly to your Kindle. Go to your Kindle to start reading." And it lists them one by one. And it states at the bottom, "The charge for this order will appear on your credit card statement from the merchant, AMZN Payment Services." So that was interesting, actually, see a bill, and appreciate Dorian for sending that along. In addition to a Kindle DX tech tip that he's sent along that I'll save for later, Stephen Windwalker emailed on the same topic of the billing. He wrote, "I can join multitudes of others in reporting that Amazon is making the new personal docs charge on a daily basis rather than letting it build up to $3 or $4.50 or $489, and the charge is being applied to each and every document attached to an email. that one sends to one's Kindle.com address, regardless of size. Yes, this is starting to look like a revenue stream. Cheers, Steve. Thank you, everyone, for those comments. And if you would like to leave a comment, one thing you can do is you can leave an audio comment. It's really simple. You just call 206-666-2713, and then it's like a regular phone message line, so you can leave a message. You can re-record it till you get it right. And it's really fun to hear the voices of people listening to the show and to put them on the show in the comments area. You can also email me a comment at podchronicles@gmail.com or leave a comment on the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. There's some great comments on the last episode, which had the interview with Stephen Windwalker on it, so check the show notes for some of the comments that showed up there that I haven't included here on the show. If you would like to be included in the Kindled Spirits email alert list, just drop me a line, an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. What I do is I send the people on that list an email the moment I've uploaded a new episode. And then, as I did in this show, I sometimes send out questions, getting ready for interviews or whatnot, and alerts on breaking news. Next week, I have an interview scheduled with Stephen Peters, as I mentioned. He's the author of the just-released new book, Kindle Culture. If you've been reading it also and you have any questions you'd like me to ask Stephen, please send me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com, and it should be a fun and informative interview. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monagat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA PromoNet. This is Len Edgerly from downtown Denver for the Kindle Chronicles, reminding you to read different. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.